Welcome to the Delta Flyers journey through the wormhole with Dax, Quark, Tom, and Harry. Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors, Ferengi extraordinaire Armin Shimerman, and pilot extraordinaire Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong.
Extraordinaire.
I gave you guys extraordinaire as your descriptive
Armin,
word.
What do you
That's
know?
That's French for so-so.
I was going to say, do you know the etymology of extraordinaire?
Extraordinaire.
By the way, I'm working with an actor right now. You do the French accent, and it just made me think of this.
Oh no!
The actor Gil Bellows. Do you know who Gil Bellows?
The name is familiar.
Ally McBeal. He was in.
That's where I know him from.
All kinds of things.
Yes,
I've known Gil for 30 years, and the AD keeps calling him Gilles, and I'm like, Jody, it's not Gilles, it's Gil. His name's Gil. And the AD is like, well, but he's from French Canadian. He's French Canadian. No, just call him Gil. Trust me.
Does she call you Rabbi? Rabbi McNeil, maybe?
Exactly.
I don't know. Let me finish this intro, gentlemen.
Yes,
for the complete and awesome version of this podcast, please check out patreon.com/the Delta Flyers and sign up today to become a patron. There we go. I got it all.
There we go.
That's good.
We got it all out.
A patron.
Yes. Fini, as we say in La France. I don't speak French. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Armin,
Un petit peu. Je parle français comme vache espagnol.
Très bien. What is the status of your roof right now? Is
it my roof? Fini.
Fini.
Except the rains came, I found another leak. But that's neither here nor there.
After they replaced the entire roof?
We made the mistake of only doing one section of the roof.
Oh, no.
And it's leak-proof there. But now we have to do another section. And unfortunately, we have solar panels on that section as well.
So those solar panels
have to come off. And
the same process is going to have to happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Luckily, I get my $13 residuals and we can pay for this.
You know what? This is more evidence that the way to go is a condo. Condos, townhouses. Houses are a pain in the butt.
They really are. They really are. Money pits.
There was a film many years ago, Money Pits. It's a money pit.
Yes.
Armin, when Robbie bought his house in Georgia, every time I called him, he's like, I'm working on this. I'm doing this to the house. I'm doing that. He never stopped working.
Yeah, for 3 years, we renovated that house in Atlanta.
So many
and then sold it and bought another house to do things to.
Too, yes.
Yeah.
It's a progress. It's a lovely problem to have.
All right, it's now time to say happy birthday to some people, and I think Robbie has the first happy
birthday. Yes, we have some birthdays. Our first birthday is Ryan Tomei. Mm-hmm. On January 31st, Ryan Tomei's birthday. Happy birthday, Ryan.
Happy birthday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next up, we have Karen Galeski, February 5th birthday. Happy birthday, Karen.
Happy birthday. Yeah. And our last birthday for now is E. LaRoque on February 7th. Happy birthday.
Our good friend.
Happy birthday.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Born day to everybody.
Yes.
Another journey around the sun.
That's right.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I think it's time for poetry synopsis.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
Okay. Starting with my haiku.
Okay.
For Move Along Home. Here we go. The Wadi love games. Quark cheats. Four must play Chula. It was just for fun.
That's funny. That's funny. You
That's
captured
good. A, good, Garrett.
Yeah, you yeah. captured an element of the plot that's hard to
I'm
do.
I'm not so sure I like Quark cheats, but
no.
Well, then you're not going to like my limerick.
No.
I'm gone in about a minute. Okay.
Go, Robbie.
All right. I actually have two limericks.
You've got two?
This was tricky.
Isn't that cheating?
Wait. Wait.
I'm going for extra credit.
Is one a Rebecca limerick and one is your limerick?
You know I never tell secrets. I never, never, ever.
I know what's going on now. Okay,
I'm curious to hear how the audience responds to these two. If you want to email us, let us know which was your favorite.
Yes.
It may, you know, end my marriage, but please, please do. Okay, here we go. With our limericks. The first limerick for Move Along Home. Here we go.
Yeah.
Cisco dresses up when the Waddies visit the station. Playing games is their favorite recreation. Quark is basically a cheat. When the game is complete, Quark's gotten a fair play education.
Oh.
Sort of. What do you think of that,
okay.
Armin?
I'm not quite sure about Quark getting a fair play education, but okay. Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't cheating sort again, of... problematic, but we've already done that. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's hear the second one, Robbie.
I mean, I think he's learned a bit that it's stressful. Like there's consequences, right? I don't want to give away the plot.
Right. Okay.
Yes, I'm going to talk more about that, actually.
Let's do it. Okay. My next limerick, the Waddy have come to visit the station. Playing games is their favorite recreation. Quark likes to cheat. Alamoraine on repeat. Fallow gave Quark a fair play education.
Oh. Another fair play. Okay.
Similar. Yeah. You know, we're playing around. I just wanted to work in Alamoraine.
Okay. Alamoraine. Oh my God. Avery loved that. Yeah.
Did he? No. They all looked so miserable doing
that. Oh, they were. They were very miserable.
I was trying to think, like, if we had to do a scene like that on our show, how I would have felt. And I think I would have felt exactly like them. Like, this is so
silly, but it's the game. Right. So it works for this particular episode, I think. I don't think it's funny because when they were chanting Alamoraine, I kept chanting Robbie McNeil because, like, it's the same amount of syllables. So Alamoraine, see, Armin, Shimmerman, too many. Garrett, too many. Wong, too few. And yours is perfect, Robbie. You're like the porridge that was perfect with the three bears.
Oh,
and it's
just right.
Robbie McNeil, just right. Count 2-4. See, that's what I was
chanting. Oh, that's nice.
Instead of Alamoraine. Just want to throw that out there. Okay.
Very good.
I want to hear Armin's etymology.
There aren't a lot of bizarre words here. So I took a very easy word. Home. Yes. Home comes from a Teutonic place. Mm-hmm. It means a village or a town, a collection of dwellings, a place or region where one properly belongs, in which one's affection center, or where one finds refuge. However, I do have a more eccentric word, and that is wadi. Wadi is an Arabic word.
Mm-hmm.
And in certain Arab countries, it's the ravine or valley, which is in the rainy season, which in the rainy season becomes a watercourse, the stream or the torrent running through such a watercourse. That's what wadi means in
the
Arabic.
Wadi. Interesting. Wow.
And also interesting on the same note is that on Duolingo, I am now learning Arabic. So
good for you.
Well, now you know what wadi is.
I know what wadi is.
Vocabulary.
Yes, I can.
Interesting. Teutonic. When is the Teutonic period?
Teutonic in English is the invasion of
German knights. Is that Germanic?
Teutonic is German, certainly. Yeah. But it's also, I may be totally wrong. I may be bullshitting everybody here, but I think it's the invasion of the Danes and the Norwegians and the Vikings will bring that sort of Titanic. So that's how old a word it is. Now there are there are various variations on the spelling and probably the pronunciation of the word home, but the original concept, the original word comes from the Teutonic.
Where you belong, the village, the gathering of people too. The people you belong with, which
I thought was very important. And I'm going to talk about the people that you belong to. I think that's, for Quark anyway, is a very interesting subject later on in the podcast.
Absolutely.
Mm. Okay.
Well, let's get into what happens. Yeah.
How about get started? Let me just run through these then.
Sure.
So Teleplay by Frederick Rappaport and Lisa Rich, Ampersand and Jeannie Kerrigan Fauci. These names are like soap opera names. You know, I'm Jeannie Kerrigan Fauci. I'm Frederick Rappaport. Story by Michael Piller, directed by David Carson, guest starring Joel Brooks as our lovely Wadi leader, Mr. Fallow himself with his lovely handlebar mustache. And James Lashley is back as Lieutenant Prim. All right, let's jump into this episode. Begin with an exterior shot of the station, and then we're in Cisco's quarters, where Ben is looking quite sharp. He's putting on his dress uniform. Jake's there as well, and he's talking about watching Bajoran girls coming to the station with their families. And Ben basically looks at Jake and says, I need to have a birds and bees talk with you, but not now. I'm busy because we're about to greet the Wadi. This first contact situation is about to happen. So I'm going to talk to you tomorrow morning. But he already knows that Nog is not a very good influence on
his son. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He believes that Jake is starting to be interested in girls. Nog's explaining all of the facts wrong, probably. Right. He just doesn't like Nog's influence. And
why do you assume he's doing it wrong?
I don't assume he's doing it wrong. I think Cisco
is assuming that he's doing it wrong. Yes.
I think Cisco thinks he doesn't trust Nog to be the influence here.
Shall we call that race prejudice?
I think there's a little bit of racial species profiling going on. Species Yeah, I do feel that. I do. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
He is a little harsh on Nog all throughout
I thought Sirach was great in this scene, though.
He is terrific.
Yeah. Isn't he? Yeah.
He's terrific. I'm watching these episodes, and that 14-year-old boy is outshining all of us. He is terrific.
Yeah, was he the age that he says his character
is? I don't know.
At that time?
No, he certainly was a teenager, but he might have been. As I remember, he was relatively young when he started. Yeah. So he might have been 14. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. He is really good in the scene.
He's
open and charming and funny. Mm-hmm. He's having fun. You know, you see a lot of kids on TV shows and films that they're just anxious. You know, they're in a set environment and they're just not relaxed.
You can feel the tension and you can see how stiff the child actor is. Yeah. They're not open. They're not playing. They're not free. And it is like a glaring, like compared to all the other actors, you can see it so clearly. Yeah. But definitely Sirach did such a nice job blending in.
And credit for that has to go to Avery Brooks, who always made Sirach feel at home, always made him feel as though he was a surrogate father for him.
Right, right. And that helps the relationship.
You can feel that. You feel that chemistry both ways in the scenes with him. Yeah, he's great.
We're in Docking Bay 4. Kira, Dax, and Bashir are there. Bashir, who ended up forgetting to pack his dress uniform when he came to DS9. How dare he?
So funny. I have said it before. I'm Team Bashir so far on this show. He's funny again. Like, they write it funny, and he nails it. It's just, he's panicking. He forgot his thing, his dress.
But Kira hasn't changed. It's a big occasion. Kira's wearing the same uniform.
She is. Thing.
That's what I was.
He doesn't have
ask
the fancy
you.
Little piping on the edges.
You mean to tell me the Bajorans don't have fancy dress?
They have to have dress uniforms. Am I right? They should.
Sure. Well,
they
doesn't Jake says something about Bajoran's fashion now is like baggy clothes or something. He talks about
in
that
prior scene. Yes,
they've got to be stylish. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we do see the Wadi. They appear for the first time. They come in, led by Fallow, who refers to himself as Master Searched of the Wadi. And this is really the favorite part of this is what I love most about this scene.
Yes.
Cisco is introducing the other three behind him. He's saying, this is Dax, this is Kira, this is Bashir. And Fallow's like, yes. Now, where are the games? He doesn't even. He's just pointing at each one going, yes. But he only cares about one thing, and that's
the games.
Yeah.
I just love that. What was your first thought when these guys walked in, by the way? This Wadi. I have a couple of thoughts, but I'm curious. Like,
their,
when
their
you
tattoos
saw them,
on their head. What are you, the forehead?
The forehead tattoo felt like a big cheat to me. It felt like, oh, we don't have the money to do a fancy
this
proper
from
prosthetic?
A guy who had worked with an actor who had a tattoo for such years.
I don't know. It just felt like, but our guy, the Chakotay guy, he was supposed to be an indigenous traditional human, right?
Yes.
These are aliens from the Gamma Quadrant. This is the first contact with this species.
You wanted them to be less humanoid, correct?
Yes. I was excited to see, oh, what are they going to come up with? Yay, creatively.
There's going to be tentacles,
these, like,
but
blue tattoos on their head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought. And they also all look like an 80s rock band to me. I'm just going to
say. They did. It was a little Sgt. Pepper's, a little bit, you know, in terms of that flashiness. And more like a glam rock band.
It was glam rock. It was like Twisted Sister or something, maybe.
Something like that.
Yeah. And why didn't any of them except Joel speak? Why was Joel the only one who said lines?
Yeah. I mean, I know why. Money. It's money. They don't want to pay the other actors any actor rate.
No.
By the way, this is something, not to get into union or SAG-AFTRA issues, but I remember in the afterworld back in the 80s when I was doing a soap opera, they would pay under fives. Mm-hmm. You had under five lines. Mm-hmm. It was a discounted rate. So it allowed a lot of actors. I got my AFTRA card as an under five on As the World Turns. I had three lines or something like that. Mm-hmm. But now we don't have that. We don't have, it's either.
You do have it.
We do?
Mm-hmm. It's under the AFTRA guidelines.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. So if
there are AFTRA rules and there are SAG rules, even though it's SAG-AFTRA, there are two different contracts.
Okay.
And the contracts allow you to have an under five.
Oh,
but on this, what you brought up, why didn't the other one speak?
Yeah, well, we weren't under an AFTRA contract, so,
it's
so
a SAG contract.
There's no under five here.
Yeah. I wish SAG.
And certainly the unions hadn't merged at this point either.
So. No, right. No, no, no.
Boy, that would make more sense if SAG.
But I wish that SAG, I wish back when they made this scene, mm-hmm. that there was an option to give a couple of lines that wouldn't break the bank. That,
right.
You know, that would have been nice to hear some other people speak.
Exactly. It would have. Yeah. It would have.
And it would have been good for the actors. They get a couple lines on camera.
Fallow then talks to his cohorts and he basically says, we want to go where Quarks is. Quarks. And so Kira says, let me lead you over there. Okie dokie. And as they walk out, you see that Sisko did not think that this first contact went the way that he expected it to go. It was
funny. It was a little light comedy out of him. Well, it's not what it used to be. First contact is not, or something like that. It was very.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny.
And nice to see a little levity coming from Sisko.
Absolutely.
Sure, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. We jump to Quarks.
We go to Quarks.
Boy, Quark is so excited about the new customers.
So excited.
And he gives the Wadi a free spin at Dabo. They lose that first time. So then he says, okay, your second spin. What would you like to wager? And I just love the presentation of that box. You think it's going to be something amazing. He pulls out these sticks. And then clearly Quark's not enthused. He's like, no, I don't need sticks. And then he pulls out this liquid, you know, this drink,
juice.
Which is priceless.
It's juice. Yeah. It looks like juice.
Yeah. It looks like,
probably,
you know,
was
fruit
juice.
Yeah. And you take it, you know, you drink it and you're like, nope, I decline. And then he goes, well, we have nothing to wager except for this. And he dumps out this bag filled with gems and crystals and diamonds, whatever it is, right?
Marbles.
And marbles. Quark's eyes open up. Quark is okay with that. He agrees with that one. There's a little bit of a passage of time, and Sisko is now chatting with Quark off to the side. This entire time, the Wadi continue to win. And Sisko says, just keep the Wadi happy. I have to go get some sleep.
Yeah, I liked there's a moment where you taste the juice or whatever. Your reaction to that was so perfect. I mean, I think I expected that it was going to, that's the bit they were playing there was, oh yeah, the sticks are bad and the juice is going to be bad. But what you did, the way you did it was so funny and unexpected. I didn't expect that reaction. I thought it was really great. Made me
Thank you. Just getting anything past the teeth was a problem. So
yes, I bet.
That's true. That is so true. You probably didn't eat a lot on camera. Drinking made sense, but eating not so much. All right. So Sisko leaves, but now Quark walks over to the Dabo table and he's trying to get these winners out of his casino, basically.
Yeah, there's some time has passed and they've been winning.
They've been breaking the bank. He's like, aren't you tired? And they're like, no, we're just getting started. And then he's like, oh, okay. Well, but my Dabo girl, the dealer, her arm is really tired. And then Fallow looks at Quark and says, replace her. And so, and I just love his affectation of the voice that he chose for this character. It's so crazy. And of course, Quark does replace the Dabo girl with Broik. And as Broik comes in, he kind of tugs him. I love that little quick tug and that knowing look, which is time to hit the button look, right? And he does. And then that begins the losses. But it's Fallow who does catch it. Fallow sees it for a split second. Oh, yeah.
You see that he's busted.
Yeah, he's looking at it, you know, and he knows something's going on. But he's going to let it play out for a little bit, though.
I liked the beginning of this scene, Armin, with you and Sisko. And he's sort of, I don't know if he was playing like he had a little to drink and he's telling stories and he's sort of lost and reminiscing about this McCullough guy, Captain McCullough. Mm-hmm. And you're just, all you can think about is the money you're losing over in the corner.
Yeah.
I like the beginning of that scene.
Yeah.
It's rare in Star Trek that we have those moments where people are just kind of sitting around reminiscing or talking like humans. There's so right. much mission all the time.
Yes.
So much plot we're pushing. Yes.
And I must say, in my memory, I don't remember that many scenes with Avery. So I was actually watching the episode just this week. I realized that's one of the few. Where it was just Avery and I, even though it's brief.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we go to Sisko's quarters next. Jake is still awake, and Sisko comes in, and he's very angry about him staying up past his bedtime. Yeah. Blames Nog. Sorry, Armin. Yeah. He blames Nog
again.
He
does. He does. But he's working on a school project, so I'm siding with Jake because this is schoolwork. He's not being a delinquent. He's in the quarters just doing schoolwork.
Yeah.
And yes, it's a project that he's doing with Nog, and of course, Sisko then blames Nog for, you know, stuff that and oh, here's the funny thing. Did you notice this? He pronounces Nog knock, like K-N-O-C-K, like knocking on the door in this scene. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, I didn't notice that,
but it's
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, not surprised. I don't want to go into it, but I'm not surprised.
Knock.
Yeah.
Good old knock. Okay. So, so this is just a scene of him just being a little upset with his son for being up. And then he's just so tired. Yeah. He says, go to bed. I'm going to bed too. Right.
Yes.
We jump back to Quark's, and this is where Fallow actually catches Broik in the midst of pushing the button and yanks his hand up and realizes that he's been cheating the entire time. And this is the scene where Quark backpedals for the entire scene.
He literally backpedals with all of them swarming in.
That was a
tricky one to walk backwards in that makeup and all the other things you're doing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And Fallow tells Quark that he will now play a new game called Chula is the game.
I don't understand. Like, he's got the magic box with his game in it and he pushes a button. But isn't that where the Dabo table was? Like, does it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's where the Dabo table was.
So does his magic box disappear the Dabo?
Well, I suppose it's like my Zoom background right now. I mean, I've got a window behind me, really. So it just disappears and disappears, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. I just didn't understand the magic box. It felt like they only had one place in the set to put a game. So we'll just make a box that'll put
it right was the here. One place on in Quark's Bar where you can get a lot of people in the area.
Right.
In a small area.
Right.
So now they just removed the Dabo table and put in the other
and one. Put in the
Chula table.
Yes, the Chula
table. How sturdy table. Was that Chula table? Do you remember?
I have no idea.
I don't just know. Like that thing looked like
we didn't knock it over, so it must have been fairly sturdy.
Yeah.
It wasn't tea. I didn't knock it over, so
yeah. Yeah, he does say, he tells Quark that he can play his game now and tells Quark that he can win back all the gemstones.
Right.
So that's kind of why Quark is into this, because he's lost so much money.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed to me that Quark was like, oh, wait, I got a way to win all that money back. Sure.
Yeah.
Give me the dice.
And again, I refer to the false scenario that there is no money in Star Trek.
Yes.
Right. Right. Oh, there's money.
There's money.
There's got to be money, even on our ship. We didn't have a Ferengi or we didn't have a Quark's Bar, but we were trading with people. We, you know, whether there's cash or a credit card or you're using your ATM debit or whatever, it's bartering, it's trading, it's valuing things. This thing is worth this many of that other thing. So, yeah, there's...
I'm just imagining Captain Janeway telling an alien representative, I'll go ahead and Venmo you after this transaction. Something like that.
Yeah, they Venmo'd. We Venmo'd in the Delta Quadrant.
And you,
okay, so you started on the second ship. What did you think of that? When they said that, I was like, what? Just making up names and things.
Yeah, I mean, totally. And Quark, of course, has no idea what chap is, what it means, and therefore is totally at a loss. And is winning, doesn't understand how he's winning.
No.
I mean, he will win the second chap.
Yeah.
But as long as he's winning, I think he's happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you look up chap, the etymology of chap as well? Is that something?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. I'm just checking.
I think that's a made up word. It's got to be a made up word.
Chap. Yeah, it is made up.
Second
just
chap.
Like chula. Chula and chap are both made up words.
They're cool but words. He's starting it. You know, the upside
second
here.
Chap.
Yeah. He's starting at the second chap. He says only children started the first chap. So he does respect Quark enough to not start him where the children start. I think that's a little bit
very kind of him.
Yes, it's very kind.
And we didn't have time for the first chap anyway.
No,
it's only 48.
That's what it was. They didn't have time for the first chap. We go to Sisko's quarters and he is sleeping in his bed. He has a
triangle pillow, by the way. Did you notice
he does have a triangle pillow?
Yes. He has a triangle pillow. Why?
It's Cardassian, I think. Right?
Because
remember the beds are a certain shape and again the pillows were, you know, it used to be a Cardassian station. So they sleep on triangular pillows is my guess.
He's a little restless
and he turns over a little bit as he turns over. He's no longer in his bedroom. He's in this strange location.
He's like on a tiled floor.
And to end this
scene. And by the way, triangular tiled floor.
Yes.
So the same shape as his pillow is now the floor tiled. So
I'm not sure if David Carson had that in mind when he went from that scene to this scene. But that is a cool, you know, segue, though.
Maybe Herman Zimmerman did. Who knows?
Yes,
maybe.
He could have. But I love that. Robbie, you like that shot when it comes to the very final?
Yeah, yes, it's a lovely shot.
From above, which that crane shot.
It's a crane shot, but it's not a crane, I don't think.
Oh, it's not a crane?
No, I don't think so.
What do you think they used?
Because it is dead center punched. It's dead center over Sisko. And it goes up and keeps him right there.
Right.
Crosshairs. Almost impossible to do with a crane back then. So
what
they
did
probably
they
put it on a cable
and
they
just
literally
pulled it up
because then it would stay straight up and down. So they probably rigged something, would be my guess. They rigged something that would keep it centered over Avery. Because if you think of a crane, it's a fixed length, right?
Correct.
Unless you have a techno crane, which we did not use on Star Trek.
Okay.
Techno crane.
Can telescope out? Yes.
In and out.
Right.
But the fixed cranes.
Yes.
If you bring it down, let's say it's a 30-foot crane. That's 30 feet from the base.
Yeah.
But if you start to bring it up, it starts to pull back because that 30-foot arm is now arcing back. So to keep that shot over Sisko, as perfect and beautiful. It was a beautiful shot because I thought about it. I was like, that's either incredible crane work, or they probably just put a cable and they fixed it to something and they brought it up, you know, smoothly. And that way it would stay center punched.
It would come up that smoothly? David. It was a tribute to David Carson, who's looking for new ways to shoot the show. Who you remember is also the director of the first episode. I don't call it the pilot, but the first episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. It was. I will say it's the first time I've seen a shot where I was like, whoa, I'm aware of the shot making.
Right.
Generally, so far in DS9, it's been a pretty traditional, safe filmmaking style. Everybody's kind of kept things a little more traditional, I guess I would say. This is the first time where I was like, whoa, that's a cinematic shot. That takes a little planning.
I feel like it must have been tied off on more than one point, because if you just have a single filament or a single wire, it's still going to wobble the camera if you pull it up in some, you know. But if you have multiple points where everyone pulls at the same time, maybe
that depends on how they weight things and things like that. I've seen situations when you want a really big move outside where you'll take a construction crane that goes up, you know, 80, 100 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And off that cable, you'll put the camera. And you can either start up high and just dive down on a straight line,
right?
Or you can reverse it and go up. But that shot was, anyway, I didn't mean to get lost in that shot, but it was very well done. There's some detail in there where I thought, wow, that's not just, they didn't throw it on a crane and just raise the crane up. It was more tricky than that.
Yeah. And it was a type of shot that we don't see on Voyager that often, if at all. To be honest. So yeah.
If we go to a commercial after that cool big shot, we come back and he's stuck inside some kind of room and he tries all the doors. Sisko tries some doors. Finally, one of them opens. He goes out into the hallway and then this other door in the hallway opens and there's Fallow, the Wadi boss guy.
Yeah.
I call him Twisted Sister. Twisted Sister opens a door and he says, "Shap 2, move along home." And he laughs and the door shuts. And I had a memory from our show, Armin. We had an episode that Garrett had a lot to do in called, what was the one with the clown?
The Thaw. Yeah. Thaw. This is almost like the Thaw set.
This moment to me, we had Michael McKeon playing sort of this clown in
the embodiment of fear is what he was.
Yes. So, yeah. And this moment when Twisted Sister comes in and says, "Shap 2, move along home.
Move along home." Yeah.
It reminded me of that sort of like Fellini, magical realism, the kind of absurdity that Fellini would shoot in. This reminded me of that. Yeah.
And Marvin was DPing at this point, right?
Yes, so, Marvin was the DP.
And Marvin directed.
Marvin directed.
So therefore, there's the connection. I think that he drew upon that same Fellini, because he was talking about Fellini when we did Thaw, right? So
yes,
now he probably did the same thing.
Marvin
here.
Remembered this episode,
most
this
definitely.
Labyrinth sequence,
most
and
definitely.
Took some of that tone into the episode he directed.
I agree. Yeah.
Twisted Sister, or Fallow, as they call him on the show.
Yeah.
He disappears. And then Sisko hears Bashir screaming.
Well, he doesn't know it's Bashir. He just hears yelling and whatnot, right? And then he comes around the corner, and guess what? Bashir is asleep, standing up in the midst of a nightmare. Robbie, explain that to me. What is going on right there? Why is he like that?
I don't know. Armand, can you explain
it? Don't ask me. I don't know.
Why? You mean why isn't he on the floor?
Exactly.
Yeah, why is Sisko was on the floor.
You know. It was the weirdest staging ever.
It's a weird stage.
Yeah.
I'm sure they just didn't want to have another shot of somebody on the floor. That's probably the reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you shoot the actors in a traditional way, like standing, you can stay on the dolly in studio mode. The dolly can go up or down from a range of like waist height up to higher than your head. But if someone's on the ground, you have to go into low mode, or you have to change the dolly, or you have to, and that takes time. So I bet they didn't want to put Bashir on the ground because, now we got to go to low mode, or we got
time and money
to do all that.
Time and money. Okay. Kira and Dax do run into the same
room. Everybody shows up.
Everyone's there. Kira is super frustrated. She is not happy being there.
No,
Kira was definitely not happy being there. Yeah.
And they don't even know yet that they're going to have to go play hopscotch in a minute and say some silly rhyme. So I don't know why they're so mad right now, because that happens later. But, I love the last line in the scene, by the way, though. Sisko says, use your tricorders for proximity checks every 2 minutes. And if all else fails, he turns to Bashir. Just yell again, doctor. We'll find you.
Yes.
They had some jokes in this episode.
Yeah.
They thought of it, I'm sure, as a comic episode. So they gave everybody a little bit of humor, which is good, always good. Comic relief.
Yeah. And I haven't seen so far much comic relief with the Sisko character. And I felt like, and I doubt I will. Yeah. But in this episode, they gave him a few, you know, buttons of scenes or some lighthearted stuff, which I thought, I wish they had done that more. I'd like to see that side of the character a little more.
And you'll see very little humor from Kira as well. So,
interesting.
Next scene is in the security office. Yes. Odo is there. Jake comes in to report his dad's disappearance. There's a nice little bonding moment between Jake and Odo because Odo actually acknowledges the fact that Jake is watching these Bajoran girls come onto the station and he's okay with it. He's not critical of it. He's actually like, I know what you're doing, young little Jake. But he says, don't worry, I'll find your dad. Move along home. Move along to your wherever you need to go.
Yes.
And so he has to go check into what happened to Benjamin.
Yeah. But he asks the computer, you know, locate Sisko. Right. Computer says, no record of that. Well, what ship did he leave on? No record of that either. So Odo's a little worried at this point. Mm-hmm. We go back to ops. Here's my favorite cowboy security guy.
Lieutenant Primin. There he is.
Lieutenant Primin, Roy Rogers. Roy. He tells Odo that none of the senior staff reported for duty. He thinks they probably partied too hard the night before at first contact.
Yeah.
Odo informs him that they are missing.
There's no trace of them on the station.
No trace.
Completely gone.
I do like the continuity, though, of this cowboy security guy, Primin.
Yeah.
I like the fact that he comes back. We didn't do that much on our show. We didn't have as many recurring characters as you guys did. And
It was a big theme of our show was recurring characters.
I love it.
Does he stay with the show till the end, Primin?
No.
Okay. All right.
No. He will have a cup.
Don't give it away. Don't give it away. Something's going to
happen. He's going to die, isn't he?
Yes,
he's
going to
die.
Is.
Just say it. I know he's going to.
He's going to go the way of the dodo bird. He's going to be.
We had some of those characters too. They come on for like one or two episodes and then they die in some great, cool way.
Yeah. I'm going to liken him to Lieutenant Carey. Lieutenant Carey was with us for a very long time. And I think the final
died
season,
in the seventh
he died.
Season,
the
yes.
seventh season, like the next to last episode, he dies. So,
and that actor was really mad about it too. As I recall, he came back after he had established his character early, thought he was going to be sort of recurring throughout. He didn't. And then they bring him back in the last season and just
and they kill him off.
He's like, you know, this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
I reached out to him on Facebook asking him to come on the podcast. He was like, nah, I'm going to pass on that. So he's so mad about it.
He's still mad about it.
He doesn't even want to talk about it. So, okay.
That's funny.
It's fine. We are now
back at Quark's.
Quark's, yes.
Yes, we are.
How much to wager on the second chap? That's the important part. Quark has to roll some dice. Now, you blew on the dice in this scene. So my question to you is, was that scripted or was that you doing that?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Because later on in another scene, he asks Odo to blow,
Odo
on,
blow
the,
on him. Yeah.
I would assume it's scripted.
Okay.
Because I don't know about your set, but there were no ad-libs on our
set. Right,
No ad-libs on our set either.
Yeah. So I would assume it would be scripted.
Okay. Because that blowing on that procedure or that meth, that, you know, action, that action of blowing on the dice is very much a thing that people do at craps tables, right?
Why do they do that though? What is the?
It's a luck thing. So people are like, come
superstition?
On, blow on the dice, like something about blowing away the negative energy or a bad juju or something like
that.
Oh,
interesting.
You know, along those lines. I don't. When I and if you don't already know, Armin, I'm an avid craps player. I never blow on the dice. It's all about rhythm,
concentration,
and mostly rhythm and smoothness, relaxness when you throw the dice. The three longest rolls in Las Vegas history are by gentlemen, three different gentlemen from that don't know each other, that are all from the island of Hawaii. And if you think about Hawaii, how relaxed and So some dude rolled for 2 hours and 45 minutes. That's the top one. The second one's 2.5 hours and 2 hours and 20 minutes. All three of those guys come from Hawaii. They're Hawaiian natives. And in Hawaii, so everything's aloha, hang loose and take it easy.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
so
we
should
start doing the podcast like that. Come on. Here we go. We're just going to relax and
take it easy.
All right. Yes. Yeah. So he has to roll, blows on the dice, and he needs to keep his Chandra, he's told, or he learns. He doesn't know if that's good or bad. So clearly Quark doesn't know what he's doing, but it seems to be going okay for him right now.
And it's a game. At this point, it's just a game.
Yes.
Yeah, granted, there's rewards, there's jewels to be had, but it's a game. It's a game.
Yeah. Yeah. Fallow says your pieces or your players will meet the Chandra. So that, we don't know what that is. It should be an evil thing. Is it a monster? But later we learn it's a little girl. It's basically a waddy little girl named Chandra, I think.
Or Sandra. Sandra.
That's the waddy pronunciation of Sandra is Chandra. Okay.
Chandra.
Well, we go back in the labyrinth. Sisko's by himself in an empty hallway. He hears this creepy kid. Door opens. She's playing hopscotch with this rhyme, calls for the team. And they, by the way, are magically quick there. Like, he calls to the team on his, you know, tricorder, whatever he does. And they're there in like 5 seconds.
Time is money, Robbie. Time is money.
I get it. It just felt a little easy. Yeah. But this is the a la Moraine scene. A la Moraine, count to four, a la Moraine,
then three more. Robbie McNeil, if you can see. Robbie McNeil. See, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure this was their favorite part of the episode.
Sure it was. It was mine for sure. Because I didn't have to do it, and they were doing it. That's why.
You can see the look on Avery's face. He can't. He doesn't mask it at all.
This felt very much like an original series kind of. It felt like Twilight Zone-y and kind of old school original Star Trek. Just didn't
rolled
it
into one. Yeah. It did. Yeah. It did. Yeah. I didn't find the little girl that creepy. What I found amusing about this scene is their reaction to hitting the force fields. Like, no one on Voyager, when they hit it, maybe this is a super force field, but when we come up,
throws them back.
And they're in pain. They're like, they're almost,
true.
They're doing a Shatner.
It's early on. We hadn't learned how to do it correctly yet.
Basically, because on Voyager, if we run into a force field, that's all we do. We run into it. We realize, it's a force field. You can't go any further. But nobody backs up in pain. Like, literally, it looked like someone had shocked the bejesus out of Bashir and out of, who was the other person who got shocked? Kira.
Yeah.
So it looks like maybe
this was the Chandra. Maybe the Chandra has a lot of painful energy and you don't want to touch the Chandra.
All right, I'll go with that.
Maybe it wasn't the little girl named Sandra.
I'll go.
It was the force field.
Yes, Chandra is the force field. Okay.
Yeah, but it's kind of creepy. They try to talk to her. She keeps playing. Kira tries to go through first. She's to the other side of the room. She's knocked down by the force field. Mm. Bashir thinks that maybe if we copy her steps, that'll work, but that doesn't work.
No.
And then Dak says, no, we got to do the whole thing. The rhyme, the moves, exactly the same.
Yeah.
And they all do this weird Twilight Zone hopscotch, saying a la Moraine and doing the hand gestures and everything. Yeah,
but it's staggered. So it's almost like a row, row, row your boat thing with multiple people, right? That's how it came off.
But it does give this scene adds to Dax's... The understanding that Dax is the science officer, she's the smart one, she's the one that figures it out. It's important that goes to Dax.
Yes.
She does this a lot in this series so far. Yeah. I've noticed that. She's saving the day over and over and over again. She's having the breakthroughs that you guys need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's super smart, and I love that. I think that's great.
I agree.
They do all the weird moves. They make it to the third chap.
Third chap.
I still don't know what shaps are, but they're cool.
Levels, I guess.
Yeah. And they're going down on the game board, aren't they?
Right. They're going down.
Yeah. Second shap is up here, and then they go down. And usually you would imagine that the move would be up to the top.
Yeah.
But they made it to the third shap. We cut to Quark's, and Quark has won some more gemstones, and he thinks he is getting it.
Yeah, he does.
This is the point where in the last time we saw Quark, he didn't know what a Chandra was. He didn't really know He was aware that he didn't know how the game worked.
Right.
Now he thinks he knows.
Right. But now we've introduced a new concept in this game, which is double their peril, double your winnings, which is initially very enticing to Quark until he realizes a little bit later what's really happening. Odo does come in at this point, and he's asking, when is the last time you saw Sisko? And just giving him the whole, you know, interrogation bit.
Yeah.
And Quark does pick up on the whole thing. You know, we can't find four of our senior officers. And that's when Quark goes, four?
Four?
Uh-oh. Four players, four officers missing. And he realizes that they are the players in the game now. And so Quark, instead of choosing the shortcut, which is double the peril, he says, the safer one. Let's just go the safer one.
And I'm going to say... That moment where Quark says, I'll go with the safer one, even though he would prefer to have double the money, double the peril. Uh-huh. It's the first time, I believe, in this show, in the series, that Quark demonstrates an affinity for the other characters. He has a relationship, a working relationship with all of them from day one. But the sense that, you know what, that he's actually going to give up profit.
Yes.
In order to be careful about people that he knows and is beginning to like. I mean, he does that because he's acquired some affinity with them. They're becoming friends.
Yeah.
And but I think you're right. It's the first of that.
The first time I've seen it. I've seen some other clues with Odo, like it's a love-hate thing with Odo. But
yeah.
There's
but
something
they had been together for a long time.
That's right. True.
Odo and Quark have been on the station together a long time. So there's a relationship there. But this is the first time he's showing that concern for Starfleet people.
For the newbies, on the station. Yeah. There's empathy finally coming from, well, a rare moment of empathy, really.
That's right.
From Quark, which is nice to see. Yeah.
And that will grow, this despite what people think about this episode, and perhaps I agree with them, but there is important things that do happen that this is part of the arc of the first season. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to point out. It's a big character move forward when he makes a sacrifice, personal sacrifice, to take the safer route, less winnings.
And begs not to be in this position anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
That will happen in a moment. But
later.
The audience is seeing that he actually does care about the Starfleet people to some extent.
Yeah.
To some extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we go back into the labyrinth. The team is in some other hallway trying to figure out what's happening to them. Dax thinks that this is just part of some kind of game. And then a door opens and there's like a party going on inside.
Mm-hmm.
And they enter this party and there's Wadi with the tattoos, the forehead tattoos all around, with drinks in their hand, and they're laughing. And our team tries to ask, you know, what's going on? How do we get out of here? Kira's getting mad. Kira throws a big plate of food, which I thought was a pretty dramatic move.
It was. She could have, you know, banged on the wall or something other than waste that food. I didn't know why she was doing that.
What if they're trapped here? They could have.
If I make a guess at this,
and
it's just as a guess, is that I've known from past conversations with Nana that she originally thought the character was male, that she was surprised when she found out it was a female character.
Oh.
And I think some of this may be left over from that original idea of hers. She's using male-like
behaviors, reactions, things like that.
This is how a man would react.
Right.
Yeah.
But we're seeing it in a female. So I think that explains some of the things that the actor is doing in the scene.
Yeah.
Okay. I just thought she was a hothead. I was like, she's just a hothead.
But I
like that detail, the specificity of what would a you know, stereotypical man do in this situation.
Right.
It's yeah.
Now I could be totally wrong about that. I'll have to ask Nana the next time I see her, but if she remembers. Yeah. But I thought that when I was watching it.
That makes sense. Well, smoke starts to fill this party room and our team is all starting to choke and suffocate. But the Wadi, who have these drinks in their hand, they're fine. They just keep laughing.
Yeah.
And then Fallow arrives, and he says again, "Move along home." And they're choking to death. Bashir realizes, he's looking around. He takes one of the drinks, drinks it, and realizes this is the antidote. The team all drinks, and they survive this poison gas that's coming in.
Yeah.
And then Fallow says, "Shap 4," and the room sort of flashes, and the party's gone, and the smoke is gone, and it's just a total reset. So they've moved to Shap 4, but it's a reset in the room. It's very holodeck-like, this game. Feels a bit
Well, that's why Quark says this might fit.
Yeah, and also, we didn't talk about this, but in the beginning, when Sisko wakes up in the labyrinth, he says, "Computer, end program." He thinks it's the holodeck.
Oh, he thinks it's a holodeck.
Remember that? He's like, door.
Exit.
Which then the exit should appear, and it didn't happen. So, very much like a holodeck. And that drink, it looks so tasty. I wanted to have some. It looked like apricot juice to me. That's what I was
saying. It did look refreshing with all that smoke. After the reset, we cut back to Quark's. Quark is still playing this game. The pieces move down to Shap 4, I guess. And Quark wins. He wins another big gemstone. It's the largest one I've seen, that big round thing, I guess.
Oh, is that the reaction shot of Quark just looking at it like, he looked like, what's the character from Lord of the Rings?
Gollum.
Gollum, it was very Gollum with the ring, yes.
Precious, yeah. But that's when, so he wins that, and then Odo has a thought. You see Odo in the foreground, kind of think of something, and moves off very quickly.
Yeah, he takes off.
We go up to Ops next, and Odo comes in. This is the idea that he had. He asks Roy Rogers, Starfleet guy, Primin, if he picks up any human life signs on this ship.
Yeah.
And Primin says, no, nothing. And Odo wants to beam over there to search their ship. And Primin says that it's not Starfleet policy. We shouldn't be doing that. But Odo says, I'm not Starfleet. Beam me over. And Primin energizes. Off he goes. And then we're in the Wadi ship now. Odo's over there. Clearly, it's a Wadi ship because there are Wadi stickers on the walls, right? Because it kind of looks like a Starfleet ship, but they got the Wadi stickers, so it must be Wadi.
Which are the little yellow caution, danger stickers is what they are.
Codograms,
I feel like this was a bot. This was like a save money episode. I'm just going to say, let's put some stickers up. That's it. We're not going to do any makeups on the faces.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit like, we've overspent. We gotta buy back some money.
For a second, I thought that was Voyager. I was like, hey, they're on Voyager now.
It looked like a Starfleet ship. It looked so Starfleet to me, but it had stickers.
Yeah.
So, it's definitely not a Starfleet ship. He opens a door with a sticker on it, and the super bright light comes out of there, which I thought was pretty cool. And Odo uses all of his heroic moves to go through this light. I thought that was kind of cool.
So he goes into the peril. Would you jump into the white? To me, I was like, why are you jumping into my thing. He's going to dive into not knowing what he's diving into. That could be a pit of despair. That could be the shark tank. Who knows? Yes. So I don't know.
Yes. Painfully bright light. That's what I wrote down.
Yeah.
Painfully bright. I would not go in that room.
Right.
But I'm kind of fair complected, so I could get a sunburn or something.
And isn't that the mythology for death?
Oh,
you see a bright light.
Yes. Go ahead toward the light.
Odo, what are you thinking? Yeah. In what world is that a good idea? Anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe but
that's their transporter.
That's like some kind of transporter thing,
room.
Right?
Yes,
right,
is what it is. Because he jumps in and he jumps right back into Quark.
Right back into Quark.
Yeah, and Fallow sees him. He's like, it's so funny. That actor is so good with nonverbal communication.
Brooks is a wonderful actor.
He's
and
so
my neighbor, by the way.
What?
Is he really?
He lives next to you? My goodness.
No, a block away. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, how funny.
I think we should go over and just Alan Moraine, count 2, 3. Just like we should chant that and see if he comes out. I don't know.
I'm sure he would love it.
he'll probably throw some eggs at us to make us leave, is what he'll do.
Well, Odo's back in Quark's, and Odo says, you've got to stop this game. And Fallow says, well, if we stop the game right now, you'll lose all your players. And this is where Quark says, basically, trust me. Look, I'm doing fine. Let me roll. He's feeling confident, even though he doesn't know how this game works. He doesn't know any of the rules, but he feels like he's been winning.
He's on a roll. He's on a roll.
So I sort of buy his the confidence because it seems to be, yeah, luck is with him. Fate is with him. It's been working so far. But he rolls and it's a bad roll.
It's a bad roll.
Yes, we know it's a bad roll right away. An unfortunate roll, Fallow says. And we go back in the labyrinth and Bashir is also very confident inside, but they don't know the rules either. They're trying to figure out. So Quark doesn't know the rules in the real game. They're inside this labyrinth. They don't know what they're doing. Suddenly this big light appears in the hallway and they all sort of go to the wall.
Isn't it like multiple lights? It was like four or five of them that came out.
Yes. There were about, I would say even more, five or six.
Actually. Yeah.
Something yeah. Like that. And there is a moment where Bashir, this magnetic field variation Dax reads, they go for cover. And then Bashir hits a wall and turns back. And all I could think of was like a 1980s music video. Like, I don't know, Duran Duran.
See, I didn't picture him hitting the wall. I thought he was still there from trying to hide from when he said take cover. When
the light.
Cisco says take cover, that he's trying to get through the door. And I thought it was just a bad cut. I thought, wait, he should have gotten well beyond that by now.
No, he's kind of up against the door and it's very Duran Duran. And he's got kind of a sexy Bashir pose, 80s rock star. Awkward door standing, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
It's a modeling pose. That's what he's doing. He's modeling.
Yes.
He's modeling his Sears Toughskins jeans. He's turning over his shoulder. Yeah.
It's an amazing moment. I'm still Team Bashir. Even with that.
Even with that moment,
I'm still Team Bashir.
You're loyal. You're loyal.
Back up in Quark's, Fallow moves a piece to the bottom and tips it over, basically.
Did you say what happened to Bashir?
It doesn't happen until he does this, right? Fallow move the piece down.
What happened to him? This is what Odo says. What happens to that one? And Joel doesn't answer.
Yes. Yeah. Fallow's basically saying sacrifice one to keep two alive.
But your Duran Duran moment, like those lights converge upon him and he disappears right after the Duran Duran moment. Yeah.
I guess I can't remember exactly when, but yes, the piece gets knocked over. He disappears in his cool Duran Duran music video.
Yeah.
And Fallow says, you'll have a chance to win it back, win that player back. And Quark wants to take the shortcut. At this point, Quark says, I want to take the shortcut. Right.
Yeah. So, Robbie, actually, Odo was like, I want that player back. And Fallow says, well, you can play the game after Quark's done.
Oh, that's right.
He says, you can probably get that player back.
That's right.
Yeah.
And this is where Quark says he wants to take the shortcut, right? In here.
Yeah.
And Odo says, no, don't risk it.
Yeah.
And Quark rolls again, and his roll is bad. And that's where that happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the game works. And I took notes. But this is the scene.
This is the Tialo scene. And he rolls the dice and it's Tialo. Sacrifice one so that two may live. And now we think this is
where
serious.
The blow on the dice thing happens, by the way.
From Odo?
Holds out the dice.
It's Odo. From Odo.
Yes.
Yeah.
He has
Odo. And Odo, the way Odo blows at it is just hilarious. He doesn't want to do any of this stuff.
We come back after Quark has learned that he's going to have to sacrifice one. And basically Quark has a meltdown in this scene. He begs. Mm. Begs to not have to choose. Really emotional and intense. I like when you disappeared below you were so emotional, you collapsed, below the table.
I actually didn't, watching it this week, I went, oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Really?
I really shouldn't have done that. Because I know what I was trying to do. There are some episodes where I distinctly remember what choices I made. This was a very important moment to me, not Quark, but for me.
Yeah.
And why? Because up until this point, for the most part, I'm still thinking a little like the Ferengi from TNG. Mm. I'm still thinking, oh, these are comic characters. And although that watching this speech, I could have done it better, much better actually. But what I remember thinking was, I need to show them that this character has heart, and that he's equally three-dimensional as any of the other characters on the mm-hmm. show. At least that's what I was thinking at the time. And I really wanted it to be both dramatic and comic at the same time. But I think it was written just to be comic.
And, oh, interesting.
And I wanted to show the dramatic side of that as well as the comedy. Hmm. And that speech was, and that was the first time they'd given me a speech.
Actually. I think you achieved it, Armin. I'm going to say,
thank you.
I think you achieved both things. I thought you were going to be critical that, oh, I shouldn't have had any comedy in it. But that's kind of what I liked. I bought the beginning. I bought all of that meltdown and the emotional authenticity
thank
of
you.
That.
Thank you.
And then the idea that took him to the floor.
Well, I took it to me the floor because I didn't want to have them watch me anymore. I just wanted to disappear.
Took it to the floor. And then when he says, okay, you know, you don't have to pick, and you pop back up, you got a laugh out of it.
Yeah, that got a laugh. And if I had it to do over again, I wouldn't have made that specific moment comic. I would have.
Oh, I see.
If I had it to do over again, mm-hmm. I would have been, I achieved kept what that. I wanted to do
yeah,
as
kept
the
that
character.
Sincere and dramatic.
As opposed, exactly. Yeah. And years later, whether it was that scene or others, but, you know, the showrunner, Ira Bear, told me that oftentimes I would do things that they didn't want me to do when they were conceiving the script.
Really?
They wanted the character to go one way, and I would drag the character into a different direction. And I that might have been one of them. But I was happy that day because I achieved, for the most part, I hadn't seen the dailies, there was no way for me to know for sure, but I thought I had achieved what I wanted to do, was to make this character just slightly a little bit more three-dimensional.
I think you achieved it. I really do. I thought the pleading and the emotional honesty of he is discovering he cares about these people. And
he cares about these people.
The most emotion I've seen coming from Quark so far.
Yes, you know,
in
that's
this
right.
entire series. So it that's was very right. moving, very moving.
Thank you.
He says you won't have to choose. Basically, he says, we'll pick, you know, the game will pick at random.
Mm-hmm. Which is no better than before, actually.
No.
Someone's still going to die, basically.
Someone's still going to die, and this is the final move of the game, he says. We'll program the game to choose one at random. Final wagers, last move, he mm-hmm. says. Yeah. So now we cut back into the labyrinth, and they're continuing through when they hear Bashir calling, screaming, kind of like Sisko said.
Bashir gone? Where has Bashir gone? You know, I would love to ask the character of Bashir, what happened between the time you disappeared and the time you show up later?
Yeah.
What happened to you? As I would like to ask, what is the time? We're watching the Starfleet people go through their perils. How long does that take compared to how long I'm throwing the dice?
Rolling right. a dice. Exactly. Yeah. Yes, I wonder.
I'm going to say that Bashir... You're asking where he went, and I'm going to suggest that he is in the Chula green room.
Yes.
Eating playing, snacks.
Yes, the game,
he's
the
eating green. Snacks.
Play, yes. Playing CD
And he's
ROM
hanging
games,
out yeah. with little Alla Moraine Chandra girl, and they're just, you know, they're having fun.
having drinks out of those long glasses. Yes.
I feel like at this point, the audience should believe that they are in peril to die, that each of these mm-hmm. characters
yeah, yes, exactly.
that they're
exactly.
going to die.
Yes. That's
right. But
and
then
they do.
At the end,
you do believe that. Yeah.
We believe that at this point. But at the end, our Twisted Sister 80s glam rock guy, what's his name again? Fallow.
Joel Brooks.
Fallow.
Your neighbor.
In the end, Fallow says, spoiler alert, everybody, but he says, oh, this is just a game. It's just fun.
Right.
So maybe they weren't going to die. Maybe you're right. It's just a green room. He's going hang out with some snacks.
Yeah. Although it was creepy having Bashir or disembodied voice of Bashir calling to them,
yes,
because it really wasn't him, right? And
that's what I
got.
The computer pretending to be him.
Okay, yeah, or Fallow pretending, throwing his voice or something. Yes, yes.
But they hear him. He says he's found a way out. Dax finds some door, opens it up, and now we're in the rock part of our set. We're in caves.
Some earthquake thing happens.
Yeah, there's an earthquake. She
breaks her ankle or something.
Yeah, she gets trapped under some rocks. Sisko and Kira come in to try to help.
Yeah.
And then Bashir turns into Fallow.
Yeah.
Bashir's in there saying, come on, you know, you got to get home. And then he turns into Fallow, and Fallow says, again, move along home. It's Shap 6 now.
Yeah.
So Shap 6 is the final move, I guess, he was talking about. They make their way through the caves, helping Dax, who's injured. They're on this ledge, and I really liked the way that that was shot, I will be honest. This very narrow crevasse that they're going along, the low angles, all the angles that David Carson got, felt like an action sequence in here. You know, sometimes in Star Trek, we don't have time or money, or it's just not, doesn't come off super, you know, cinematic. I thought this scene with the cave walking was really shot well, very cinematic. They all three continue. They cross this super tight ledge. There's another tremor. Mm-hmm. And they basically all fall off this thing. The one moment in this sequence that I didn't like was when they fall, because it appeared like they were jumping. It didn't feel like they were collapsing because of this thing. It felt like three stunt people, or maybe the actors even, were told to 3, 2, 1, jump.
I bought it though.
You did?
Yeah, I did. I'm fine with it. It was okay.
I didn't like that.
Still, yeah. Well, that's okay. We don't have to like this, like the same things.
Exactly. So,
it's fine.
Look at all this trouble you caused, Quark. You do all this
as they fall, they end up landing in Quark's is what happens, right?
Yeah,
so that's right. What we so they're okay, they're safe. Quark is relieved, but Sisko has a word that he must have with Fallow. He's pissed, and he definitely walks up to him about to, you know, try to get an explanation of how dare you put us through this. And that's when Odo intervenes and says, no,
good friend Odo.
Your good buddy Odo. And he basically squeals on you and says that the reason why this whole thing happened was because of Quark's cheating. And so therefore we realize that this is all about Quark doing that initial move, which caused everyone to be thrown into this Chula game to begin with. So Sisko's not happy with Quark on that point.
Yes.
He comes over and dresses down Quark a little bit for the cheating.
Right. And forgets about Fallow altogether.
I know.
I'm not saying that Quark isn't responsible to some extent, but it's Fallow's
it's
game.
It's still Fallow's game. Exactly.
Exactly. I do love, though, that Quark is like, you know, we may have some room for this game at some point. It's like up in the balcony. We got
it's a HoloSuite game if I ever saw one. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And then he goes chasing them at the end of the episode. He goes chasing after them to try to add their business.
Right. So the two people that are responsible for the entire peril in the episode is Fallow and Quark, and somehow they're just able to scamper out and we don't care after them.
Yes.
We just leave them alone to do whatever they're going to do.
Yeah.
That to me, and this is indicative of what I always thought, whether the writers thought it or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they look foolish to me if they're not reprimanding Quark for the nefarious things that he's doing. Mm-hmm. And they are. They're just letting him basically off the hook here at the end of the episode, as well as Fallow for that matter.
It feels a little bit tonally in kind of the sitcom genre. Like, this kind of storytelling is like, look at that wacky thing that happened.
Yes.
All right, let's go back to life.
Let's go back to the Dominion Wars. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just a situation comedy where we just have some laughs and then there's no
consequence.
Right.
Yeah, it feels a bit sitcom-y.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, there you go. Move along home.
Move along home.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Alrighty, What is your lesson for this episode, Robbie McNeil?
My lesson is don't cheat people. Yes.
It's a good lesson.
I learned from, what's his name? Broik and Quark taught me cheating. You're going to have to learn your lesson if you cheat, because there's consequences to cheating.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Armin, what is your lesson?
My lesson is a line that I had in the episode. There are risks in every roll of the dice. Whatever you do, there are possible risks in them. Well, yes, Quark and Broik cheated, so there are risks in that. Yes. There are risks in everything that we do. Every time we make a decision to do something, there's a risk in it. And I think that's a very good thing to know.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that, because during this pandemic and during all this time, you know, there's been everyone's been sort of evaluating their tolerance for risk and tolerance for things like that.
That's so, right. People aren't wearing masks now. It's wintertime. This is when COVID spikes, and they're not wearing them. And even though they've been told,
everybody sort of and it's a good reminder that there is risk always, and just to be conscious, to be intentional about how much risk you're willing to choose, rather than just being naive and thinking there's no risk. There's always risk. That's a great lesson.
But I want to add to that, I feel like you also have to be careful to not be so careful that you don't risk, like don't take on some measure of risk, because in the episode, Quark actually says nothing ventured, nothing gained, which is, sometimes you do have to take a risk, and to find a better place, you know, or a better station in life, you've got to take a risk. If you play it safe all the time, it's not going to get you anywhere. That's the bottom line. Because when you play it safe, you're playing not to lose. You're not playing to win any longer. That's the difference. Yeah. So my other lesson is just cheaters never prosper. So we're all on the same page on that one.
Cheaters, cheaters, cheaters. Oh, Quark and Broik.
And my question, and I don't know, I'm going to learn as I watch these episodes. Does he ever cheat again? And I actually don't remember cheating again.
Oh, so he learned.
He may have. He may have. He does nefarious things, but the cheating, I don't think he cheats again. I may be wrong.
Literally pushing a button.
I'll get letters saying that, he does this in this episode and that episode. Right. But I just don't remember after this cheating again.
Interesting. We'll see. We'll keep an eye out for it.
We will see.
Well, there you go. There is Move Along Home, a very controversial episode for a lot of people.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to Move Along Home, Little Doggies. It's so funny. When I made that funny little musical,
Roy Rogers?
Yes, I did that like last episode, but then I didn't even know anything about this episode. And I was
Move Along Home.
Has nothing to do with Roy Rogers or anything.
Everybody should move along home.
They really should. So join us next time when we will be reviewing and discussing the episode The Negus. For the rest of you, Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.